And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I am Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And I am Kurt Hogue.
And this is Kurt's first time on the show, and this is really our first time with a three-man show. And Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. It's good to be on here.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously with three people now, we get more of a perspective of what we all think on certain topics. And for our first topic, Colin is convinced that first base is built on an Indian burial ground, now with Matt Gamel out, with Corey Hart out. What did the Brewers do now that Mike Karp went to Boston? Is Carlos Lee still an option? Are they still going to go internally with guys like Taylor Green or Alex Gonzalez for first? Is Hunter Morris an option? What did the Brewers do here?
Right now, the way it looks is internally is probably going to be Milwaukee's first option. They still want to keep that payroll low. Not that anyone they'd really pick up would be that expensive, except for Carlos Lee. No free agent is probably going to come in at this point. I would imagine Lyle Overbay is slowly being pushed out of Boston already. I imagine the Brewers make a play for him later in spring training, but probably Taylor Green or maybe even Alex Gonzalez is word out of the team.
Yeah, and if you look at the internally aspect of it, you got Matt Gamel, who was the replacement player, and he's pretty much the definition of a replacement level player, if you want to talk in that terminology, because, I mean, he's nothing special on defense. He's a below average defender. I mean, he's not going to draw a ton of walks, and he's going to steal a couple bases for you. But then if you look at the drop off from him to Taylor Green, you're not losing a ton of Taylor Green. He's got the same level of pop in his bat, and he can do things on defense, and he's a better utility guy, so I can see Taylor Green filling the void at first. Because, I mean, Colin touched on the free agent aspect. You're not going to get guys who are going to want to come here in spring that know that they're only going to get the job for a month until this Corey Hart guy comes back.
Yeah, and Taylor Green literally is built to be a league-average replacement as
yeah.
well. I mean, we're not expecting Taylor Green to be the second coming of anybody except anybody else on the bench.
Just stick him in that 7 or 8 spot and, you know, hope he can just drive runners in at the bottom of that lineup and get on base is what you're looking for.
Right. Go ahead, Benjamin.
And with Corey Hart being injured and coming back from injury and Gamel being out for the season, does this make a bigger push for Hunter Morris? Because he's one of the most highly touted prospects right now in Double-A. He did really well, and a lot of people think that he could be a possible option if the Brewers don't want to, say, stick Alex Gonzalez at first with Gene Segura at short. I mean, I'm not really opposed to it, but then again, I don't think rushing Hunter Morris up to the big leagues is the best thing the Brewers can do right now.
I'll tell you one thing straight away. Hunter Morris is a highly touted prospect in the Brewers system, and, I mean, Aaron Boone from ESPN loves him. He made that clear yesterday when they did their, you know, obligation to cover the Milwaukee Brewers. But I don't think he's ready. I think in the grand scheme of prospects, I mean, what are you really looking for out of a first base prospect to begin with? Probably a lot of power potential. You're not looking for much on defense. You're really just looking for him for a bat. And I don't even think he's ready in that aspect yet. I think pushing Hunter Morris up before he's even seen a pitch at AAA is a dangerous proposition for the team to be making.
For a comparison on that, I agree. Hunter Morris coming up, kind of like how they pushed up Tyler Thornburg last year. He didn't do awful, but in the end, how much did it really help him get? He 8-9 homers hit off him in only a couple of games. It's not going to help Hunter Morris that much. I mean, give him consistent at bats against better pitching at AAA to get him ready for eventually when Corey Hart's pushed off a first for the job that is his.
Right, and you have to be thinking about Corey Hart's extension on this too. If the Brewers end up extending Corey Hart, you're bringing up Hunter Morris, and you're wasting a move on him because mm-hmm. you're going to have to bring him back down to AAA, or you're wasting time with him on the bench as a sometime pinch hitter and a sometime defensive replacement. It's really, I mean, it doesn't do him any good, and possibly just blocks his move back up in the future. I don't think he starts on a 40-man roster. He might be a September call up, but other than that, I don't see him being on this roster this year.
You know, and Kurt brought up a good point with bringing up Tyler Thornburg earlier than he probably should have been. And, you know, the Brewers did have a lot of pitching adversity last year with Narvison out, Markham out for a little bit, Greinke soon to be gone. So, I mean, I'm not exactly opposed to having Tyler Thornburg up here. I don't know if he's exactly ready, unlike Willie Peralta, who I think was ready. But, you know, I think guys like Morris, guys like Thornburg, you have to take your time with, because you rush them up here, they're not going to be any better than what you want them to be. They're just going to be a bench player, if even that good, because you push them past AAA, if you even have them in AAA for very long, and then they're up to first base, up to the major leagues, and, you know, their first times, you know, going to the plate or being on the mound, they're just like, oh my God. They're, you know, we don't know because we're not obviously baseball players in the major leagues, but you can imagine it's kind of intimidating being there playing against these guys who have been there for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Tyler Thornburg's case was a little bit different, too, because Tyler Thornburg was on the move from AA to AAA anyways, and he just had, like, a stopover in Miller Park for a little bit. And he was also more of a victim of circumstance. At some point, the Brewers ran out of options when they started when all their pitchers started getting injured. And so Tyler Thornburg was like a fun thought experiment that just turned real in, you know, playing the Blue Jays. But Hunter Morris isn't a necessity to bring up the way that Tyler Thornburg was. Not saying that Tyler Thornburg was our only option at that point, but, Hunter Morris definitely isn't the only option, and there's no reason to be pushing him any further. I think his trip to spring training at first was just a, let's see how you do this year, and then you can come back and make a real run at it next year.
Yeah, and then I looked up the home run stat. I was curious. He gave up 8 homers in 12 innings, including 3 starts in 8 games. But for this year, guys, what do you think about Tyler Thornburg? Do you think he's ready to be a back into the rotation guy, or do you think we should stick him in the bullpen, maybe a 6th inning kind of guy? Or do you think he's better off in AAA?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because I wrote an article about that a few days ago, and I don't think Thornburg is a rotation guy now or next year. I think he's going to be best suited for long relief, but I think he needs to get more of a shot in AAA to kind of mature his game and get used to it, because you can throw him in there, like you said, for the 12 games, but he gave up 8 home runs. So, I mean, yeah, he is getting a little bit of major league experience at a time, but how good is it when he's getting blasted out of the park all the time? I think he needs some more fine-tuning, but I definitely see him as a long reliever, kind of like the same thing I see a little bit with Mark Rogers. Possible starters if you need them, but more or less, if the starter gets into trouble early, you place them in the game.
I think Tyler Thornburg spends a year in AAA, hones his skills, comes back as a starter. He's built for starting pitching. I saw him play when he played for the Timber Rattlers, and I followed his career up through AA as well. I think he's going to end up being a starter. I don't think he's going to be an ace of a staff. He's a solid, probably number 3 pitcher. But I think he's got the skills for it. He just needs to be able to do it. And I think he was rushed last year. So you'll probably see him spend most of the time in AAA this year and then come back and make a run at the rotation.
And also, the Brewers wouldn't have called him up last year and given him those 3 starts in, what, July, if they didn't see him as a starting pitcher at the major league level at some point in the future. Maybe not right now. Maybe right now he's working on, you know, getting through the lineup 2-3 times against professional hitters, working on his change and whatnot. But they called him up last summer, and I mean, he gave up a lot of long balls, but other than that, he wasn't doing terrible. Struck out almost 9 guys a game. So yeah, I see Thornburg as a 3-4 guy in the rotation, because yeah, That's what Brewers are projecting for him.
Yeah, and the teams, at least in Thornburg's debut, he was playing against a team that had, power throughout the lineup in the Toronto Blue Jays. And his first 2 times through the batting order, he had pretty good control, he had pretty good command, and he was frustrating some hitters. But it was that 3rd time around the lineup that he really started to get battered. And I think part of it was he was probably put in a little bit too long in some of his starts. But, yeah, I think he just needs some time to figure out how to make adjustments against hitters.
And if you're going up against guys like Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion and that Brett Laurie guy that we maybe sort of could have had still, they're going to crush the ball the second, third time around if you're going to leave a pitch up in the zone. It's just going to happen. I think that's part of the maturation process for Thornburg. Yeah, I have a positive outlook on how he's going to turn out as a professional player.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to having him in the rotation at all because you have to look at guys like Chris Narvison and wonder how much longer he's going to last. So obviously you're going to have to throw somebody else in there, whether that be Thornburg, whether that be Merck Rogers. Personally, I think Merck Rogers is built more for spot starting and long relief. But, you know, guys like Willie Peralta as well. I mean, I think what we saw out of Peralta specifically in September was really impressive. You know, it's a really small sample size to go off of. And
the Astros.
Yeah, I mean, he did face the Braves, he did face the Nationals, he faced the Reds. So he was facing some pretty good power teams there. And then you have to wonder where guys like Peralta, Thornburg, and Rogers fit into the rotation beyond 2013. And I think you fit them all in there, but then you have to figure out, well, then again, where does Mike Fiers go? Is Marco Estrada still going to be the number two? And then there's a possibility of extending Gallardo once his contract's up. So there's a lot of questions the Brewers have with, but internally, I think they're really built on pitching, and I think that's one of their strong suits.
I think starting pitching is a little bit of a concern, only because we don't know how teams are going to adjust. Well, we saw how teams adjusted to Mike Fiers, especially after the battering that he took in Colorado. Things kind of fell apart on him after that a little bit. We have some concerns. I don't have a concern with Marco Estrada at two, and I might be one of the only people in the country who isn't concerned about Marco Estrada at number two. Gallardo, I think, is going to get an extension as soon as the Brewers can possibly afford it. It would just be silly to let him go. He's going to develop into a guy that you're going to want at the top of your rotation for the rest of his career. Marco Estrada at number two is fine. It's when you get to Peralta and Fiers and whoever that number five guy is going to be is where you're going to start to get issues. But I think starting pitching has some concern. I think relief looks a lot better this year, depending on which Jim Henderson and which John Axford show up.
Yeah, all right, guys. I got a little hypothetical for you. At the end of the year, playoffs or not, what do you think the Brewers' five starters will be?
Ben, why don't you go first?
All right. Obviously, Gallardo, Estrada, Fiers, Narvis, and Peralta is what I projected to happen in one of my articles. And I'm going to stick with it. Unless there's an injury that happens to anybody, I'll probably fit Rogers in there at some point. Or if Narvison just does bad, or Peralta just does bad, then you stick Rogers in there. But I think it's going to be that. I don't really see it deviating from that point. We've seen Marco Estrada prove he belongs in the rotation. We've seen Mike Fiers prove he belongs in the rotation, despite August till the end of the season. Chris Narvison, I mean, he's a left-handed pitcher. He doesn't have that much success, but he has experience. So I don't see him moving past a four. And the Peralta, I think, is just a fun option to use at five for the time being, because I think he has a lot of potential with him being 23, being a good young arm. I have a lot of confidence in Willie Peralta.
I think by the end of the year, it's probably going to be Gallardo, Estrada, Peralta, Fiers, and Narvison. I think we've seen a lot out of Fiers in a short amount of time. I think he can make the adjustments. I love the way he attacks hitters. He's pretty fearless up on the mound, and once he learns how to make those adjustments, I won't necessarily say the sky's the limit for Fiers, but I think you're going to see a good, dependable couple of years out of him in a career. Narvison just has the ability to go out and work the way that a lot of pitchers in the Brewers system don't. I mean, he's not going to shut down lineups. He's not going to be a strikeout machine, but I mean, he can weather a storm pretty well, and when he gets himself together, you're looking at a very, very dependable pitcher in Narvison when he's healthy and focused on the mound. Peralta and Peralta's really the only wild card at this point. I mean, we saw a few starts out of him, but being a major league starting pitcher for a whole season is a lot different.
I guess it's my go now. All right. Gallardo. Got Marco Estrada. I really like Marco Estrada. I hated him. I admit I hated him. I couldn't stand when he came into games in 2011. When he would come, I would just pray for just him limiting the damage. But last year, my gosh, he was one of my favorite players in terms of how he just produced for the team last year, and he came up big when we were making our run to the playoffs, and I think I see that happening again in Mike Fiers. I'll put him in there. And I think Willy Peralta's, he's the candidate for Rookie of the Year this year.
Okay. Sure.
I mean, what he did last year was, in his short time, was solid, and but again, you can only look at a small sample size so much, but I don't know, that slider of his is absolutely filthy. So I think that pitch alone can keep his rookie, make his rookie year successful. And then it's down to Rogers and Narvison. And so I think I'm going with the rest of you guys and going Chris Narvison, because front row Amy likes him, so we should probably like him too.
I'm glad I'm not alone in thinking that Willy Peralta is going to be a solid Rookie of the Year candidate. I really think he has a lot of and a lot of potential to do really well. I mean, like Colin said, 1 month in September is a very small sample size as compared to April, May, June, July, August, then September again. And then if you make the postseason, then that's something even else that you have to add on to it. So, yeah, I like Peralta. I like Rogers. I just don't know how exactly Rogers fits into the rotation with Narvison still there.
That's, yeah.
But,
Narvison has a track record of, you know, 10, 11, 12 games that he can win every season. And Rogers, we just, you know, he's had a rough go getting into the majors. And he had a suspension in there for banned substances and all sorts of stuff going on, too. So he's going to need, he's going to need to put in some real work to make this rotation over Narvison, I think.
Yeah. If you look at, I don't think Rogers will have a ton of trouble making the roster, and I also think he fits better in the bullpen than Chris Narvison would, because Narvison's built to go through an order multiple times and just keep battling and dogging at the hitters. But Rogers, he can come out and strike out a bunch of guys and he needs to work on his ground ball percentage if he's going to be a good reliever, but he struck out over 9 guys per 9 innings last
right.
year.
And,
starts.
And we already have a lefty built for the pen anyways, so
yeah.
We need two in the pen?
You don't need two Tom Gorzolanis in one pen.
I didn't think we needed one, but here he is.
Well, I mean, now that you have Gonzalez and Gorzolani in the bullpen, both left-handers, it does add quite a bit to it. You also have Miguel De Los Santos, but him making it, I just don't know if that's going to happen right now.
Right.
But
I loved what I saw from De Los Santos too. I thought he had some really good movement on his pitches. I just don't know how much of a place for him they're going to have.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is you look at all the guys that we are going to battle it out in spring training, you know, the next couple of weeks, which is amazing, by the way. I mean, we're finally here. it's going to be interesting to see guys battling out four spots, specifically pitching, because, yeah, we have Burke Badenhop, we have Tom Gorzolano, we have Mike Gonzalez and Jim Henderson and John Axford and Brandon Kinsler. But you want to see guys like Michael Olmstead, Ariel Pena, Josh Stinson, how they're going to do in comparison with other guys that are fighting for spots. And you know, I think the Brewers have a decent farm system for pitching. It's not the greatest, but then again, it's not that bad. You know, the Zach Greinke trade really gave us two really good prospects in Johnny Helwig and Ariel Pena. So I can expect to see maybe at least Helwig up here sometime this season.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see how these guys battle it out.
Yeah, I'm fully on the Michael Olmstead bandwagon. I may even be driving it at this point. I think that guy's incredible. His story is amazing. He had to put his career on hold for his family and like overcoming injury. He had a Tommy John surgery in his early 20s, and he's come back and he still has 3+ pitches. And he just looks scary. He looks like the type of reliever you want on the mound when things get a little tense, because he's going to intimidate a batter or two. If he doesn't make the roster straight away, I'm going to be a little bit disappointed. But there is not a lot of room and a lot of people that have good potential in that bullpen.
I'm glad you brought up Michael Olmstead, and I mean, you pretty much touched on everything about his pitching, but I want everyone out there listening to this to search Michael Olmstead mustache. That's right. Michael Olmstead mustache. That is why he should make it.
Yeah, it's not like Derek Holland's attempt at a mustache. It's like an actual mustache.
Derek Holland is pretty much what mine is right about now.
I mean, well, at least you're trying, though.
Michael Olmstead quite literally looks like a lumberjack, and I think that alone should give him a leg up over the competition.
I agree. We love you, Michael Olmstead. I'm saying.
Yeah, and then looking at who we have offensively, obviously we talked about the first base spot and how that's kind of blown open at this point. Guys like Bobby Crosby, you know, how do they fit in here?
Ugh.
You know, it's not the greatest of options that you have, but it's an option regardless. And you're just like, well, I mean, at least he's somewhat competent. So how do you guys think that, not just Bobby Crosby, but anybody that the non-roster invitees, because Colin and I touched on this before, but Kurt, I want to get more of your opinion on this. How do you think they're going to factor in to spring training? And who do you see possibly even making the 40-man?
I did the non-roster invitee, basically the guide on everything you need to know about him. And one of the guys that I really was liking when I was writing it was... Hold on, let me pull this article up. But it's the former Angel anyway, Escobar. For the non-roster invitees last year, the guy that made it, I mean, we had Ishikawa and Conrad, and we all know Conrad turned out. And I am never living that down. But Escobar, I mean, he's a former All-Star, and he hasn't pitched since 09, but his comeback story is incredible, and he had the willpower to get back and make a big league camp, and he hasn't pitched since 2009, which is when he only made 12 starts or so. But if he can show that he's still got some decent velocity, he lost it with all the surgeries he had, but that's one of the guys I'm looking at. And I'm also just trying to see some of the other prospects, some guys with names like Donovan Hand. I know, Benjamin, you ranked him in our top 20 ranks.
Yes.
And so I'm interested to see how he does and how he fares against big league hitting for the most part. And also Jed Bradley. I mean, there's no chance, no real prospects of this guy making the roster, but he's a big lefty, good figure on the mound, and he just a first round draft pick in last year, 2 years ago, 2011 was it? Yeah. And he got roughed up last year in his first pro season, but he's been saying that it was just a result of him trying to mature, and he wasn't worried about giving up runs when he was working on his secondary pitches, which is a positive thing to say and shows that he's more interested in becoming a better pitcher than putting up good minor league stats. So I think Jed Bradley is prepared for a bounce back season in the minor leagues, and he's another name that we can throw into the future mix in the starting rotation. I see him as a fourth or fifth starter down the road, a good left-handed arm. And so those are three of the guys that I'll be looking at.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously when you get a highly touted draft pick like Jed Bradley, like that class with Bradley and Youngman, you want to keep an eye on those guys. I like them. I want to see how they do for sure. Kelvin Escobar was another one that was on my list of people that I want to watch just because that fastball he had, I don't know how much of it he has left, but the fastball that he had was pretty vicious. And I think he's still got the stuff in him, and he definitely has the drive to make a major league roster. And I said before, I'm definitely watching Yadiel Rivera, who's a catcher who I developed the slight man crush on while the Tim Rattlers made their charge to the championship. He's super aggressive and just really fun to watch. And he has no chance of making the team this year at all as a catcher, obviously. But it's just going to be fun to see how he works against big league talent.
Yeah. Also, another name to throw out there is this 18-year-old shortstop, Orlando Arcia. Good player. Working on his defense, but he can hit, and he's from the Dominican Republic, so he's a guy. He won't be making any noise this spring, or you won't hear about him, besides if you follow the minor leagues, but he's a future guy that I'd like to see in the infield.
He's definitely someone you want to watch, too, just because the Brewers' international scouting has never been great or notable, even. most of their international players they pick up through free agency or whatever. But it'll be interesting to see because if he pans out, it would mark a change. When you see, like, you know, the Brewers going after Aoki last year and then finding this 18-year-old kid out of the Dominican Republic, which is, I mean, obviously a baseball powerhouse in the Dominican. It's going to be interesting to see how he pans out for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to wonder, some of these guys that we've been talking about, throwing their names around a little bit, you know, the biggest question I think that stands for the Brewers right now is, once Ricky Weeks' contract is over, A, do they re-sign him, and B, if they don't, who takes over at second? You know, a lot of people thought maybe it might be Taylor Green. It could possibly be
Scooter.
Yeah, Scooter. Completely skipped my mind. But I mean, I don't know exactly if the Brewers are planning for that right now. But obviously, Weeks, we saw last year, didn't do a whole heck of a lot. He had power at some times, and then other times we might as well just stick a straw stick man up there or something. You know, a scarecrow or something, but I mean,
at points he was playing at Brooks Conrad levels.
I think he's playing worse than Brooks Conrad.
Would it be fair to say that I'm in the minority when I say that I didn't think Weeks played that awful last year?
You know, you're not really. It depends on what you're basing it on. I think a lot of his, as it was so often pointed out to me in my Ricky Weeks criticism, when you look at the more advanced metrics and the more in-depth ways to view a player's performance, Ricky Weeks did not have a terrible year, especially after the All-Star break. He did quite well. But I don't know. I think Ricky Weeks is overpaid is the main point. I don't think he's worth what we're paying him and for the length that we're paying him, considering his injuries.
Yeah, the biggest thing that a lot of people look at and say, oh my god, his average was down, that's not the biggest thing that bugs me about Ricky Weeks. The fact that you look in 2011, he struck out 107 times. In 2012, he strikes out 169. And, I mean, it's just his patience
at the plate. He also played a full season last year.
Yeah.
What was that?
He played a full season last year, but I mean his strikeout percentage was up to a quarter of his plate appearances, which was bad.
Yeah, it's just his patience at the plate is something that a lot of the Brewers seem to have a problem with, aside from like Ryan Braun and Aoki. They seem to have a problem with that, and that seemed to be really Ricky Weeks' problem. But you know, we still have the power, 21 home runs. RBIs were down from, if you look at 2010 where he played 160 games, he had 83 as opposed to 63 RBIs, but I mean, it wasn't a great year, but like, Colin said, after the All-Star break, you started seeing his name a little bit more.
All in all, I would say it was a season to forget, obviously. I mean, you're only OPSing 728, but the stat, runs created in the WRC plus, which is adjusted for park factors and based on league average, and 100 is average. He was sitting right at 100, which makes him essentially an average offensive player over the total of last year, but then you have add in his fielding, which was, I mean, it's always been bad. As much as he's been working on it, it's just never gotten up to the level that we hoped it's been. So last year, I'd still say he was below replacement below replacement player, but he'll bounce back this year.
I think personally, to get at the heart of the question here, I think Ricky Weeks' time in Milwaukee is probably drawing to a close. You look at the contract that he's working through currently, the amount of money that he's eating up, and it's possible that this season, this healthy season, even though the going excuse for Ricky was that he wasn't 100% from that injury through the first half of the season. If he can play a full season healthy now, let's say he does, and let's say he's only a little bit better than he was last season, I still don't think he's worth the money. And I think you look at someone like Scooter, who we know fits better at second base now than he does at shortstop, because he doesn't quite have the lateral movement to play short. I think you look at that and you have to realize it's time to give Scooter a chance. And you know, when Ricky's contract is up, I think we let him walk. I don't think we can afford to keep him on at his going rate of production.
Especially with the guys that are waiting and can fill in. Yeah.
So we're going to start seeing, like, free Scooter hashtags on Twitter now?
Not quite yet. I think we let... How many years does Ricky have left on his contract? Is it 2 seasons?
I wouldn't say that's one.
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Let me check real quick. It's not very many.
I think it's through 2014. That's
yep.
just... Is it?
Yep. Next season will be his last season, so...
Yeah, it's... I mean, we can't... At some point, we have to move Scooter in a deal, or we have to let him play.
The one thing that goes on in my head, and it makes it tough for me to mentally, you know, picture not having Ricky on the team, is you think back to 05, 06, when, you know, you had JJ coming up, you had Ricky, you had Prince, and then you had the other guys like Corey Hart and Bill Hall, and then a couple years later, Ryan Braun and Giovanni, and those were the guys that the future was based around, and eventually we have to get to the point, and they already started with Fielder no longer on the team, and that whole move to not try to re-sign him, you have to make the effort to, you know, realize when these players are no longer worth what they want to be paid for, and it's going to come soon with Ricky Weeks.
Yeah, it's Ricky Weeks and Corey Hart have always been those guys that like we pushed for because they were our guys.
Mm-hmm.
And when something like that happens, especially on a small market team, if we're talking about like the Yankees or the Dodgers, or you know, the Rangers are one of these more high payroll teams. Ricky Weeks and Corey Hart are guys that you know you're going to enjoy seeing, but you're really not going to care if they walk or if they stay.
Look at teams like the Rays, and they let guys walk, and they're still winning 90 games a year. Part of that's Joe Maddon and the genius that is the general manager over there, but. They like Carlos Pena, B.J. Upton, Scott Kazmir, and they traded him, Matt Garza. All those guys are walking, and here they are, still doing it year after year.
They let Pena walk twice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, the Rays are a very good example of a team that they fundamentally know what they're doing, and they're like a really good burger that nobody knows the special ingredient, special sauce for, and nobody's going to tell.
Ben, only you could.
Right. Well, burger metaphor aside, I mean, the motto for those teams a lot of times is, for lack of a better term, kill your darlings. You have to be willing to let these guys walk with the knowledge that you have people in the wings that are going to produce, and you have the ammunition to make the moves that you want. And for Corey Hart and Ricky Weeks, a lot of it seemed like, you know, we like our hometown guys. We like our homegrown people. And I'm not saying that Corey Hart and Ricky Weeks have not panned out in the long run, but at some point, with Corey Hart's looming extension talks going on and Ricky Weeks' contract coming up in 2 years, it seems like it might be time to kill your darlings, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because you have to look at the fact that these aren't guys still in their, you know, mid-20s and almost in their prime. These are guys that are heading up towards 30 now, and there are over 30. I mean, I think Corey Hart will be 32 soon, and Ricky Weeks will be 31 later this year. And I'm not saying when you turn 30, you shoot him like a gimp horse. I'm just saying you have to look at that, and do you want to give them a 3 or 4 year deal? Because sure, they might produce for the first year, but what if they get hurt in the next one, and then they can't produce anymore after that? And, you know, with Doug Melvin having those 3 year refusals for pitchers, you have to wonder if it's the same mentality he's bringing to, you know, infield players and outfield players. Obviously, the Ryan Braun extension was something that this team did because it's Ryan Braun. I mean, but to do that for somebody like Ricky Weeks or Corey Hart, I mean, I just don't see it happening. Maybe a 2 year deal for Corey Hart, but I just don't see anything there for Ricky Weeks, especially with Scooter Gennett there, Jeff Bianchi even there, if he has any hope at this point. Taylor Green still looming in the wings somewhere. And you have guys in the minors that are, you know, wanting their chances to play. But I just think, like you guys said, Weeks' time, even though he's been part of this team his entire career, is really coming to a close with Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's business. It's not, at the end of the day, the Brewers are in the business of winning, and even though over the history of their career it hasn't been a very fruitful business for them, you have to make those decisions sometimes, and the amount of, you know, it's a cost-benefit thing. How much benefit will we get from Ricky Weeks, a guy we have never been able to comfortably place anywhere in the lineup for a long period of time, someone who hasn't been able to stay particularly healthy, but still garners a big contract. At the end of the day, how much is he really worth for this team when you look at it in the long run? And I don't think his value is as high as what he's going to be asking for.
I think we've summed it all up with Ricky Weeks, including the burger analogy. So, Doug Melvin, if you listen to this, make a good burger this year.
Make a really, really good burger.
Yeah, burgers?
We'll have to get some of those burgers in July.
That's what I was going to say.
I am extraordinarily hungry now. Thanks, guys.
That's what we do.
I want to do one thing really quick while we're winding down. I want to talk really quick about number one, our fantasy baseball league. Dibs on Brooks Conrad.
We love you, Kurt.
People
stand you.
Just a reminder to the people listening, there are three ways that you can join our league. We're going to let three players in. Tweet us at ReviewNGTheBrew with the hashtag LetMePlay, and the best one will get a spot on our team. Comment Facebook wall, or send us an email at ReviewingTheBrew at gmail.com, and we'll be able to get you in if we feature you as Email of the Week in our mailbag feature. But beyond that, what I want to talk about is I want to get really quick from you guys who you think your first-round pick is going to be, just so I know that I can steal them and make you feel even worse when I beat you up with the player that you like the most.
Okay, well, I'll start off on this one. And with the first, well, I have, when do we decide the draft order, by the way?
Soonish, I think.
Okay, well, obviously, love my boy Ryan Braun and my other guy Mike Trout, but I'm not going to tell you who I'm taking. But this is, but okay, I'll give you my main strategy is I looked for home runs plus stolen bases. That's what I put those two numbers together, and at the end of the draft, I need to have a certain amount of those because those fuel offense, to me at least. And then pitching, I really don't know what I'm going to do with that. I got to look at that. But also, Scott Posednik is my second-round sleeper pick right now in my Brewers Dynasty League.
Nice. I think my broken Scott Posednik bobblehead is going to make the topper to our trophy.
Yeah, my first round pick is going to be Alcides Escobar. Just throwing that out there now. Followed by Elliot Johnson. So, no, but no, I've always really gone pitcher heavy. So I'm Ian Kershaw, Ian Verlander, guys like that. Offensively, I would love to get Ryan Braun, considering I'm all brains and brawn. That's my team.
There you go.
So I kind of have to get him. So I don't know. I like to go after pitchers. At some point, I actually start taking relief pitchers a lot earlier than some people do. But that's why I'm like a 5-time champion, because I'm smart about it. I go after pitchers.
Don't pay for saves, Benny. Oh, and one more question, Ben. Are you also Ian Kennedy?
Say what?
Are you Ian Kennedy? You guys didn't get my joke. All right.
I got it. I got it.
Oh, I got it now.
The chat to catch up.
I got it now. No, but probably if I'm going offensively, I might go for... I don't want to go for a catcher in the first round, because then I would go for Buster Posey. But maybe Trout. Maybe Miguel Cabrera. We'll see.
I like to look... Like Kurt, I like to look home runs first and foremost, because why not?
And chicks take the long ball.
Man. Absolutely. From what I understand, they still do. I'm conducting a study to see if that is, in fact, still the case.
Well, I have warning track power. My batting practice sessions always end with flyouts to the warning track, and I mean, chicks love warning track power, too, apparently. So.
That's true. From my limited amount of playing days, I can tell you chicks thoroughly do not dig line drives.
They just don't understand.
I mean, but I have good fundamentals, and they don't dig that either, so.
But chicks also dig perfect games. I mean, look at Kate Upton letting all those people into the 2K perfect game club. Oh. So. I'm just saying, I mean.
No, but I like to look home runs first, and then I want to find a really consistent RBI guy. When pitching, I really don't look for until a little bit further in the draft, because unlike Benjamin, I draft to win. So, and really, I only pick up whatever relievers people leave around, because it just doesn't have the same impact to me as a starting pitcher.
So you think you're going to beat me when you draft the ex-Brewer Cameron Lowe and guys like that? You're going to beat me with Cameron Lowe?
I've already beaten you, Benjamin. I'm in your head.
Uh-huh.
Don't have to worry about it.
Benny the Jet, I could beat you with no relief pitching. Put it down right now. No relievers, still beat you.
I don't know. When you factor in the ERA and strikeouts and stuff like that, I don't know.
One inning. It's all the ERA to contribute.
One inning with 3 strikeouts. That adds up over time. I'm telling you right now.
All you need to do is find that reliever that strikes out every batter, because, you know, that's what pitching's about.
Okay, maybe I'll have one reliever. Maybe that's a bad claim. I've been known to make those.
Well, I mean, I don't want to hurt your guys' feelings, but when I'm the champion at the end of the year, I mean, I understand you might be a little frustrated about it, but I mean, I understand. It's cool. So, especially when I beat Colin in week one, so that's going to be the best.
Yeah, that is not going to happen.
Yeah, I think...
You are going to be embarrassed, and then you're going to be banished from the Fantasy Baseball League, because we just can't allow that level of poor competition in our league.
Oh, Colin, I don't want to have you banned. I mean, we started the league. It'd be weird to kick out the guy who created the league, you know?
Oh, no, I'm the commissioner, and either way, after you win or lose, you are going to be kicked out.
But then we'll have an uneven number of people in the league. So
we can always get another reader.
Yeah, I mean,
Absolutely. People are clamoring at the gates. There's literally tens of people willing to play this league.
But we have groupies, right?
I think we have two.
What, Amanda?
That's probably about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and then I think...
Fellas, the Cheyenne DOS apologists are ready to obliterate both of you. So.
Kurt, that's going to be something when we play each other. We're going to have the Cheyenne DOS apologists versus all brains and brawn. This is going to be a little bit interesting there.
That's just a little bit too awkward for the fans of baseball gods.
Colin, I'd like you, real quickly, just to... What is your name? I don't get that. Like, what are Wallbangers?
Collins Wallbangers. It's a callback to the 1982 World Series Milwaukee Brewers, managed by Harvey Keene, whose nickname for the team was Harvey's Wallbangers.
Ah, interesting. I thought it was just people who ran the walls, but... like, I don't know.
The thing about a good team name is it works on multiple levels. Harvey Wallbanger is also an old-timey cocktail. So, it calls my much greater depth of knowledge of baseball than Benjamin has. It calls into my love of being over 21 and being able to drink whenever I can. And also the fact that I'm going to be the champion and you, Benjamin, are going to be a loser.
Well, Colin, you're going to be drinking a lot after I beat you in week one, so... So... Just throwing that out there right now.
Watch, one of the people we let into the competition is just going to run away with this thing.
Probably, we're all going to be, like, left in the dust. And, like, Lou, he keeps saying he's going to, like...
We're going to have to shut the website down. We're just going to have to end our baseball careers.
We'll give it over to whoever wins, and they can just have it.
Yeah.
It'll be embarrassing to face everybody.
Yeah, Lou keeps saying we're going to beat him. Watch Lou, like, get into the championship or something. I mean, it's going to happen.
No, it's like Andre in the league. All of a sudden, he's going to be some secret genius, and
oh my god,
Lou's going to have his wife draft for him.
just
because
like Kevin
that's
in
what
the
you
league.
Do with a wife, right? They draft for your fantasy team.
That is true.
I think that's the notion I've been getting.
That's why it's important to when you find someone you want to spend your life with, you pick someone with a depth of fantasy knowledge.
That's right.
You guys can't marry, what's his name? Matthew Berry. I know it's tempting because of all that fantasy knowledge, but still.
I can in Massachusetts.
True. I think Kurt might be one step ahead of us.
He's tweeting him right now.
No, but,
oh, that's right. Follow me on Twitter. @YouStupidHogg, H-O-G-G.
There you go. Benjamin, throw your Twitter handle while you're at it. It's Captain Snugglebottoms.
Nobody's letting me live that down.
No, I created it. It is fantastic. It's happening.
I don't remember that night. That was a bad night. That was a bad, bad night.
This is a thing now, Benjamin. You can't get over it.
No, but my Twitter handle is, for those of you who haven't noticed after our... What is this, our 31st show or whatever? I don't even know. Mine is that 101 MLB guy, so... And no, I'm not changing Captain Snugglebottoms. No matter how much Colin or Amanda or Kurt pleads, I'm not changing it.
I think it might be available, though. You might want to snatch that up.
I just checked. It is.
Yeah, I'm way too much fun with this, I can tell.
We should start a Benjamin parody account and tweet about how important it is to go pitcher heavy in your fantasy baseball league.
We would also tweet about what the Walk is dead and
I don't tweet about much. Well, but
we'll talk about Brandon League's first round draft potential.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, so much. You don't even know.
That middle relief for the Dodgers. Oh, fantasy heavy. Wow.
That Jonathan Broxton. Oh my.
You don't snatch up Chris Capuano, you're in trouble.
We're looking at you, Doug Melvin.
All right, do we have any more baseball things to talk about, or are we just making fun of Ben for the next half hour?
I'm good.
Yeah, I don't know if I can go through this again.
All right.
I'm a pretty broken man right now.
Not broken enough. We'll see you on Twitter after the show.
Gee, thanks. Well, guys, hope you appreciated the show. Hopefully, you know, Kurt, you can come back on again. And we can have everybody on at one time. That'd be amazing. But feel free to come on whenever, man. So as long as you don't decide to bash me or my pitching strategies.
So come on back.
Yeah, I love them. I love them. I love how you draft. Keep it up, bud.
You know, thank you guys again for listening, and stay tuned in the next 2 weeks as we start to get into spring training now and the World Baseball Classic.
All right.
We'll see ya.
I gotta go!